Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Today on our podcast, I wanted to highlight a candidate in Iowa House District 84. His name is Trevor Lynn. This is a four-way Republican primary. I'm going to try to get all the candidates on before the primary hits. But before we get to my conversation with Trevor, first, a word from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And I'm back. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Trevor Lynn, a Republican candidate in Iowa House District 84. Trevor, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us and our, myself and my listeners. I really appreciate it. First question I ask any candidate, whether they're running for president or running for Congress or just, you know, Iowa House, why do you want to run? What's motivating you to run?
Well, thank you for having me today.
You're very welcome.
The reason behind my running is, I believe that if any public official or candidate running for office they should have the interests of the public, the needs, the wants, the concerns of the people in their heart. And if the public and the people and their needs and concerns are not in your heart, and if you're running for different reasons, I think you need to reevaluate why you're running. But for me specifically, I'm running to protect our Second Amendment rights, to protect our farming and agricultural sectors here in the state, to be a defender of the Constitution, and to create a better state for our generation to pass on to the next generation, and to make sure that we are teaching children good Iowa values that will better their lives and provide a better future for them and their families.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a young candidate. I graduated high school from Waco High School in 2015.
Okay.
I was born in Washington. I live in Brighton, in rural Brighton. We have a small farm that we own and operate, and I currently work with, alongside my father, Lynn Painting. And, we're a small painting business that specializes in house painting, commercial painting.
Okay.
So a little past work history, I've been a page in the Iowa House in 2015. Then from there in 2015, Governor Branstad appointed me to the Juvenile Justice Advisory Council.
Okay.
And along the same time, either in 2015 or 2016, I started serving on the Washington County Central Republican Committee. And then in this past 2017, in January, I was elected to secretary for that committee.
Okay.
Then in the past legislative session, I've worked alongside Senator Mark Children in the Iowa Senate. And that's my private sector. Well, public sector, I mean.
Right.
In the private sector, I've worked alongside, you know, my father since 2014, whenever I could be back home. My first job, or first, I guess, adult job, was 4 days after I turned 16, I was hired to work at a local pizza ranch.
Okay.
Then also in college, I've spent some time working in Best Buy in Ames. I do attend Iowa State. I'm a junior there for political science, is my major with a history minor.
Mm-hmm.
And the original goal was to become a foreign service agent and to become a diplomat, help out Americans who are in trouble or struggling overseas, wherever they may be going through, just to help them out and get them back on American soil or make their inconvenience or problem, you know, get a solution for them. But when I saw this seat opening, I thought to myself, well, you know, why can't I go out and help the my neighbors and friends and the community members right here in my own neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know, my own county? So that's my reasons for running for House District 84.
So if elected, are you going to, I'm going to assume you're going to continue studying at Iowa State, maybe just take a spring semester off?
So what will happen is if I win the primary on June 5th, I'll transfer to Iowa because a 45-minute drive is a lot easier than a 2.5-hour drive.
Right.
Yep. And then I'll go part-time every other semester.
Okay.
So when, you know, in the, when legislation or when the legislature starts, you know, I would not go to school that semester, but then on the off term, then go back to school for a little bit. I have about maybe a year and a half if I go part-time.
Well, hey,
so I'll get the degree.
If Governor Reynolds could get a college degree while being a lieutenant governor, certainly you can as in state legislature.
Oh, yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be really fun.
Okay. All right. So one of the things you'll have to be working on if you're elected, education consists of about 57% of the state budget, including Regent, universities, community colleges, K-12 education. And there seems to be, over the years, growing centralization in K-12 education especially. And it seems like local control in education has diminished. First of all, what does local control in education look like to you? How would you define it? And
well,
what would be the ideal?
Go ahead. Well, this is very near and dear to my heart. And it's one of my things I'm running on, one of my platforms.
Okay.
I went to Waco High School. It's a small high school in Wayland, Iowa. And a couple years back, we were struggling with some budget problems. You know, as you know, when the state gives you money for education to each school district, it comes with strings attached.
Right.
Or there's grants. You know, this money can only be used for infrastructure or renovation or athletics. Well, we came to a problem where we ran out of, you know, in our infrastructure and our classroom materials. We ran, you know, rock bottom. But we had several million dollars in our athletics department. So while we were struggling to buy, you know, new textbooks, we were working with textbooks from a decade ago. You know, we could afford two new gym floors and a new track. And to me, that's just not right. So one of the things I want to do is give school boards the power to move their own money around. We need to start thinking at the state level that we need to trust our local county supervisors, your city governments, your school board officials. The best government happens at the lowest level possible. And so for me to give that power back to the local officials, and especially the school board, and give them the power to determine what they want to teach or what they want to specialize or what they want to really educate the children on. Now, of course, I want some, still want some steps or some oversight at the state level, you know,
mm-hmm.
just to make sure that every child in the state, you know, is proficient in reading, you know, every child has some science and some math, just to get those basic things at the state level. That's really my own concern in that. That's why I think the state should be focused on is just making sure that the bare minimums
okay.
are met. You know, that every child in Iowa will be proficient enough to go into the job force. But it's up to the school districts to how they should teach it. You know, do they want to focus more on offering higher levels of science classes? Do they want their kids to graduate with a mandatory chemistry class? Or do they want, you know, environmental science as the highest science determined? So I think once we give the power back to the local school boards, it'll benefit everybody because parents will start getting more involved. The teachers and the administrators will start getting more involved in the process, and the kids will benefit in the end when we just turn education back to the school boards like it was originally intended to be. The Department of Education at the federal level has far overstepped their original charter.
Mm-hmm. So it's very rare for me to talk to a candidate as young as you. You actually were in the classroom when Common Core was introduced into Iowa. What has been your, what's your experience been like under Common Core, and what's your position on it?
So it leads to a lot of mandatory testing. I don't think we were always preparing for some mandatory test,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was ITBS or MAP testing or some other things that was just mandated by the state. And you saw firsthand how it stressed the teachers out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of teaching you and focusing on the material, they started teaching you how to pass the test. You know, mm-hmm. here's the materials you need to pass the test. I believe the teachers liked it much better when they had the opportunity to actually teach and educate the children and to teach them things that would actually matter instead of simply teaching them how to pass a test. So I would like to look into Common Core and seeing if there's anything we can do at the state level to diminish it or to revise it. Make it more teacher friendly, because it starts hurting the teachers,
right?
So and causing them undue stress.
It also
hurts children in the end.
What was your experience with Common Core math? I heard a lot of frustration from parents.
Oh my goodness, that was a nightmare. It was, you got to a point where the teachers get so frustrated because. You know, they're trying your best, but they hold you to unrealistic expectations. You know, the Common Core is set up as if every child is going off to a 4-year university, and that's not the case. That's not what's supposed to happen. There are some people who are simply not meant for a 4-year college, and you know they want to go into diesel mechanics or. Into
right.
the agricultural field, or maybe just want to go into gunsmithing or some other field. So we need to encourage that and give, you know, teach these kids and at least have a little seminar or something that says, hey, you could go to this trade school, be $20,000 in debt, but then 2 years from now, you could be making $80,000 or $60,000 versus being, you know, $200,000 in debt. And that starts at the math and science level. We have to change courses and give the school boards the power to look at each child as an individual and not as a one-size-fits-all policy, because rarely does a one-size-fits-all policy work, and that's what we have in the state right now.
Great. What's your position on school choice?
So I fully support homeschooling and private schooling. For me, the biggest problem that I've had parents come up and talk to me is that they can't afford a private school.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many religious schools offer, you know, grants or tuition assistance if you're a member of their parish or congregation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you still have that burden. In the Republican Party platform, it's stated that the money should follow the child. Well, moderate Republicans and Democrats surely will not go for that. So we have to be realistic here. If we can get legislation through that has money follow the child,
mm-hmm.
and of course we need to maintain large majorities, not slim majorities, but large majorities in the House, the Senate, and we need to keep Governor Reynolds in office, then I would support a money follow the child.
Okay, so an education savings account.
Mm-hmm, yep. Okay. But if the, you know, say the Senate is held by Democrats, mm-hmm. or we only have a 50 to 51 majority, or I'm sorry, a 49 to 51 majority in the House, well, then we're going to need to do some fancy footwork and going to have to get a compromise through.
Right.
So one of my compromises or solutions, if we were in that position, would be to have a setup where maybe 75% of the money follows the child to that private school, and then the remaining 25% goes to the public school district that that child resides in.
Hmm.
Because, and that could just be one solution, you know,
right.
Those numbers could be changed when
right. I'd have to tell you, Democrats probably wouldn't even go for that, but
yeah.
I like your thinking.
That's hopeful thinking too. But maybe there you could get more moderate Republicans to jump on board with you.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you too, recently, we just passed, or the legislature passed, the heartbeat or fetal heartbeat abortion ban, and Governor Reynolds signed it into law. If you were elected prior to that, is that a bill you would have supported?
Oh, most definitely. To me, being pro-life is so much more than being anti-abortion. And I have a three-pronged approach to pro-life.
Okay.
Of course, now we need to protect that heartbeat bill. We need to stand up to senators and representatives and the lobbyists who would like to overturn it.
Obviously,
we need to protect that unborn child.
Right.
Or we need to go to the Supreme Court and fight it there, wherever they decide to fight it, because I think the Democrats will fight it at some point.
Well, it's already, yeah, ACLU and Planned Parenthood mm-hmm. already filed suit in district, mm-hmm. state district court, so it's already being challenged, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no, I definitely support the bill, and I'd like to see it in place.
Okay.
But my second prong is also make adoption easier here in the state. Right now, we have 17 pages in the Iowa code covering adoption. And the average cost to adopt is between $30,000 to $40,000. So now when you ban abortions or make it harder for abortions, we're going to have more children. You go into the foster care system and get up for adoption. So we need to be accommodating there. And you know, I don't have all the solutions yet as to how to make the adoption process easier.
Right.
But that's some discussion I want to start having.
Okay.
And the third prong is that I believe that this is coming from my service on the Juvenile Justice Advisory Council, is that we need to enact stricter child endangerment laws. Currently, I think if it's bodily harm, then it's up to 5 years. I would like to make that minimum 5 years, you know, and so forth.
Okay.
But I believe that will help because a lot of these people who, you know, may be struggling, 19, get pregnant, some of them do come from abusive households where they don't know how to be a parent, you know. They only know pain and depression. So we need to target these child monsters, you know, these people who target the most innocent people here in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
and we need to get tougher against them and send a clear message, because I will not stand for it, and I don't think anybody should stand for it. It's intolerable to me.
Okay. So you've already said one of the platforms you're running on is on the Second Amendment. Where would you like to? How would you like to see gun rights protected in Iowa? What does that look like to you?
So I would like to expand the Second Amendment to 18 to 20 year olds, just to get handheld firearms,
okay.
So pistols and revolvers, that sort. Then I'd like to turn around and try to get a constitutional carry. Legislation piece through the House and Senate, and hopefully onto the governor's desk. You know, guns are not bad. Guns are not evil. Guns do not kill people. It is a moral problem we have here. And so when you start to talk about the morals and the human using the weapon, I think mental health should also go into that discussion. But as for Second Amendment, we need to stand up to the Polk County legislators and the Democrats throughout the state who want to take away Second Amendment rights. And my favorite saying is, these people who go out and kill other people are not supporters of the Second Amendment. You know, the school shootings and such, they're not following the Second Amendment. And when you enact legislation against guns, you're only harming the law-abiding citizens. Because last time I checked, criminals do not follow laws. They
right.
don't care. So how will more legislation solve the current problem we have here in the state?
Very good. We just passed a tax reform package here in the Iowa legislature, and it's without going into a lot of detail, it's very nuanced. There's a trigger before we see deeper cuts. Ideally, what would be the ideal tax relief, tax reform package for you? What would that look like?
So I think what was passed by the governor's desk is a good start.
Okay.
But we do need to look at and see if we can't get a little bit further progression here. I would like to see the small farmers and smaller agricultural people like family farmers, century farmers, give them more benefits, or maybe if they want to have solar panels put up on their barns, you can give them a tax credit there. Just be a little bit more accommodating to the rural communities throughout the state, because in my experience, in my views, these rural communities are far more important to Iowa, especially to our agricultural economy, mm-hmm. than Iowa City or Des Moines. So I would like to see a little bit more assistance to the agricultural community.
Okay. Well, as the legislature was debating this tax reform package, I mean, we were hearing a lot about how the state can't afford, you know, these tax cuts because our revenue isn't quite matching up with our level of spending. So in your mind, do we have a revenue problem or do we have a spending problem?
I think we have a spending problem.
Okay. Good to hear.
The state loves to spend, you know, more money than what they currently have. And we have a balanced budget bill or law. We already have that balanced budget. So before the legislature adjourns, it has to have a balanced budget for the next year. However, the issue there is that it's all ran off of estimates. You
right.
know, and typically they estimate something like a 4% economic growth in the state. Well, that's generous. Oftentimes that doesn't happen. So I would encourage, instead of 4%, we bump it down to 2% and be a little bit more realistic.
Okay.
But we do need to cut lots of ineffective, outdated programs that are just no longer working. One of these cuts is, I have a solution. I know 16,000 is a small number. But as I worked with as a secretary in the Senate, we got a little email that said, if you come in to clean out the senator's desk, then we'll pay you a full 8 hours worth of work. Well, you take that times the 50 secretaries in the Senate, mm-hmm. and then you go over to the House and you do the same math over there. And, you know, I made $13.44 an hour.
Yeah.
End up with 16. What was that?
My wife and my daughter were both clerks, so I, yep.
Oh, so you know this. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But it comes out to the state paying $16,128, I believe, to pay 150 individuals to go up to Des Moines and clean out a 4x4 foot desk that the legislature could have done themselves.
Right.
So that's just one of the things that we need to look at and say, why are we spending taxpayer dollars on this? You know, that's an insult to the taxpayer, in my opinion. So that's just one example of the kind of investigation, I guess, that I would be pushing for to make sure that we are spending taxpayer dollars in a responsible manner.
Okay, so another thing that we have seen over the years as our Civil Rights Act changed to include sexual orientation and gender identity, there's the greater potential of these SOGI laws butting up against, you know, religious liberty. One, you know, probably the best known example would be the Gortz House owners in Grimes. That doesn't exist anymore, but, you know, the Iowa Civil Rights Commission found against them. The complaint was filed because, while even though they had homosexual customers in their day-to-day business activity, they didn't want to necessarily host a same-sex wedding. How do you balance, you know, obviously we don't want to see people discriminated against, but how do you balance that along with protecting religious liberty?
So we have to look at this, once again, from the individual standpoint. I'm a Christian, and it's simple. You know, most Christians believe straight as the Bible says, marriage is between a man and a woman. So most Christians are I guess, okay with homosexual marriage as long as it doesn't affect themselves. But then another large majority of Christians are just flat out against it. I'm in favor of religious liberties and rights. Our church, for example, took a congressional vote, and we won't host a same-sex marriage. It's because of our religious beliefs. Now, the flip side of that, if a homosexual couple wanted to get married, you know, for example, at Lake Darling at the state park out there, that's completely fine. I mean, that's state property. You know, that's not owned by a religious organization. Well, you know, you've got the same things with city halls, that kind of stuff too.
Right. Well,
I'm hesitant of forcing religious organizations to follow the rest of the pack.
Well, let me stop you there for a second. Religious organizations already actually have protections under Iowa law. I'm thinking more along individual property owners and business owners. For instance, the Supreme Court heard, and they'll be rendering a verdict here pretty soon on the Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission case. Jack Phillips, he was a Christian cake decorator who was not sued, but a complaint was filed against him because he had homosexual customers who would come in and buy pre-made cakes and or other bakery items. He didn't want to decorate a cake for a same-sex marriage, and was fined and was told that he had to take sensitivity training because, you know, they said, well, you're not a religious organization, you're a business. So, you know, the question is, how do you protect the right of conscience for an individual business owner, even though they're not a religious organization? See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. There, I think we need to enact some legislation that goes along the lines of saying, you know, the owners, small business owners' religious belief does have a say in the matter. It's even though it's outside of the religious organization, you know, that person still has a strong connection to them, and we need to respect that. I'm sure the same would go down for a Muslim cake decorator owner.
Right.
You know, I'm sure if the people came to his organization or his business, he would say the same thing. So this isn't discriminating against any religion, you know, it's just protecting the religious, views of that individual.
Okay. We're going up on a half hour here. So I just want one last question. It's kind of a multi-tiered question. Where can people learn more about your campaign? And is there anything that we haven't discussed that you just want to make our listeners aware of?
Yeah. So you can find out more about my campaign by going on to Facebook and liking Trevor Lynn, L-Y-N-N, for State House. There I have a very active Facebook account. You're up to date on everything and all the events. As far as any last topics, we've talked about a good majority of my platform. Small rural islands, education, Second Amendment. I guess I will touch on biodiesel and ethanol. Okay. I fully support the renewable fuel standard, and when 41% of the Iowa, corn and soybean crop goes into biodiesel or ethanol, that's a very large chunk of our agricultural sector.
Right.
So we need to encourage continual growth of that, just to benefit the agricultural community and give them a new marketplace to conduct business in. And it's also benefiting Iowans every time they use it, because it's grown here locally in Iowa, it's manufactured here in Iowa, and we're creating jobs and keeping jobs here in the state.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Best of luck to you on the 5th. And, if you happen to win the nomination, we'll probably try to have you back on.
Awesome. Well, thank you. It was a fun time.
Great. All right. Take care, man.
All right. You too. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out CaffeinatedThoughts.com. Again, that's CaffeinatedThoughts.com. Or Google us on at Caffeinated Thoughts, and it'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for our emails. That way you don't miss a single update. Hey, until next time, my friends, this is Shane Vanderhart. Take care.